All right, Kirk, thank you so much for doing this, man. I appreciate you for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So starting at the very beginning, I came across Crazy Ass Moments in New Metal History organically. I believe I was on X initially, formerly Twitter. And it blew my mind because I was getting really nostalgic for New Metal. And here you come basically curating all the best moments. So I guess my first question for you is, starting at the very, very beginning of your journey into New Metal, how old were you? You know, how did this progress?
Objectively speaking, I would have been 13 or 14 or something, and as a consequence of coming of age of around the turn of the century, that would be the music that I would have gotten into. And I was more into like later wave type New Metal, like Taproot and Linkin Park and bands like that. But that doesn't really count to me as like getting into New Metal, because I had to do what everyone else did, which was fall out of New Metal. You know, you get to like middle school around 2006, 2007, and it's like you're like, I gotta pivot my whole brand to emo kid now. I was pissed. Meteor had dropped, Fallen had dropped. I thought we had the New Metal shit locked up. I still had the cargo pants, I had baggy everything, and it was just like, boom, no. You need to go back to Hot Topic. You need to get the skinny everything. It was upsetting. It was very upsetting. And then I went to Indie Kid, and then I was lost in the wilderness for a while. And I kind of found myself at this crossroads when I moved from Chicago to Los Angeles to start work at this production company. And when you're working in production in Los Angeles, 9 times out of 10, you're working in let's see if I can do air quotes so hard my fingers break, a cool office where you're all the family and you never go home and you order lunches and they play cool music, right? So you go to work every day and you're hearing like Arcade Fire and Radiohead and LCD Sound System. And it's just like, I was just like, wow, I hate this. I really hate this. Like it took my opinion of all that music from like, I was like, kind of like, oh yeah, I love this stuff too. I hate this shit. I don't want to hear this ever again. So it kind of was inspired by this need to find a type of music that would actively like repulse everyone, all the cool people that I worked with. And what I loved about New Metal then and what I love about New Metal now is it still can like upset a room. Like you could put on our biggest songs, you can put on Break Stuff, you can put on Freak on a Leash, you can put on Paper Crawling, you can put on all these songs and people still will like stand up and take notice of it. They'll be like, oh yeah, oh this song, this is, oh this song. It's still like distressing to people in a way that so much other rock music, whether it's Green Day or even Nirvana would come on the radio at my cool office all the time and just nobody would flinch. It'd just come and go like it was any old song. Like it was When a Man Loves a Woman by, what's that guy's name?
You know, I have no idea. I know the song. Right? Yeah.
And so like where I feel like all of these other types of rock music has sort of crumbled into just easy listening background music for overworked millennials, I feel like New Metal stands proud as being just triumphantly terrible and impossible to ignore. And I just adore it so much for that. It's funny how I'm like, you know, I'm like 4 years deep in this journey, a year and a half or so in this very public journey is like my official CEO of New Metal title. And people still fix their face and say like this whole genre was bad. And I think that's really inspiring. I think that's great. Keep that energy, please.
That is something I want to pick up on, the CEO of New Metal. Tell me a little bit about that before I'm going to tell you my relationship to New Metal, but let's talk about the CEO of New Metal. How did that come to be?
When did that term happen? I started referring to myself a really long time ago. I don't remember what the inspiration there was, but just something I started referring to myself as. There's someone else on Twitter that refers to themselves as the real CEO of New Metal, but they're like 17, so I need to not be bothered about that, but it still bothers me. I'm still like,
I'd be salty. Yeah,
thought I was doing my job, jeez. But I've always just tried to approach this from a very philanthropic, like as open-heartedly as I can approach this like position that I'm in. Like the way I remember when I first started referring to myself as CEO of New Metal, what I did was I had this secret page on my website where I uploaded all of the New Metal albums I could find that weren't on streaming. And I would give them away for free as free downloads. And I would say, like, thanks to me, the CEO of New Metal, I have delivered on these lost classics. So I call it the Lost Classics page. And that's just what I remember That's how I remember referencing it. And now I consider myself America's only underpaid CEO. So, you know, for better or for worse.
I'm in agreement. You know, before we touch on kind of the professional aspect of your journey, I want to try to make sense of nu metal revival. I want to preface, I mean, to your point, I was a scene kid. Maybe I still am. You know, my first album was Hellbilly Deluxe by Rob Zombie, then $3 Bill Y'all by Limp Bizkit. But to your point, I transitioned to being a scene kid organically, right? Then it became, you know, I'm 14, under oath.
You got that DNA, though. You got that DNA. You were just waiting for someone to turn the key. I know.
I was, and that person was you. I'm not going to be hyperbolic. You have to know this.
We got agents everywhere. We got agents everywhere. You know the band Good Charlotte?
Of course.
We had their guitarist on, and he was like, it was really funny. He was like, I never liked emo, didn't fucking care about pop punk. I was a nu metal kid. I had dreadlocks and everything. I did the emo stuff because, like, that's what was hot at the time. And I'm like, I fucking knew it.
Damn.
I knew it.
That's a wild take, though, because, I mean, for me, it all flows together. Look, I don't believe in looking at any of this as irony. I want to be very clear, and I don't think you do either. I think you approach this very authentically like I did. I don't believe in irony. I've collaborated with
You cannot do nu metal and be ironic.
Exactly.
This is, like, least ironic genre of music ever. There's no, like, arch way of taking this on where it's, like, you look cool or removed or distant. Like, you got to commit all the way. And that's
completely
why people struggle to make newer new metal, is because we live in this era of, like, white hot cringe all the time.
Sure.
Where expressing yourself in a way that's genuine and feels genuine to you can immediately get picked up by, like, reaction bloggers and TikTok and Twitter and stuff, and you can just get eviscerated for that kind of thing. Like if somehow Freak on a Leash came out tomorrow brand new, you would see, like, all these YouTube thumbnails, like, the cringiest song of all time.
Of course.
Live
of course.
Reaction.
That's their take.
What is he doing?
It's a normie take.
That's what it would be like. That's what it would be like. So when people want to, like, make new metal, they play it really conservatively. They make it just like it sounded like 23, 24 years ago. And that shit is not going to work. So to me, like, what excites me the most about, like, younger bands that are making new metal is, like, I think, like, 100 Gex has
yes.
the best thing smoking in terms of forward thinking, like, excessively heavy music. And I know this is true because nu metal fans fucking hate 100 Gex. They fucking hate 100 Gex. Did you see them open for Deftones at Dia de los Deftones?
I didn't. Tell me.
Utterly disrespected by the crowd. Crowd just standing there, mean mugging the whole time, no movement whatsoever. And to me, it's like, yeah, that's the energy. That's what the fuck I'm talking about. Like, nu metal should not sound like it did in 2004. Like, that's so stupid to imagine that would be the case. Like, it should sound like that. It should piss people off. It should make people say, like, this isn't music. How can you call this music? That's, like, that's what the fucking ticket is to me.
Yeah, and no, I wholeheartedly agree with you on that. I think it's fascinating. There's always going to be snobbery, you know, in every genre, of course. But to your point, the evolution is pretty clear. Personally, I've gotten into a band called Mood Ring, who I know
they're great.
Yeah, I know they're a fan of your work. Mood Ring is easily one of my favorite bands, period. Both past and present. It's crazy. Kirk, let's talk more about your professional journey in that case, because we're getting to the point in, you know, crazy ass moments in nu metal history. So that is really the entry point to your expert curation. And I say that quite intentionally. Tell me how that began, you know, give me the full everything.
It was a fad going around on Twitter where this one account, Harper, I actually had on our podcast, started up an account of her own called Crazy Ass Moments in American Political History. And it blew up for them really quick because we have a lot of those. And then there was a bunch of knockoff accounts that followed in the wake of that. You basically had a Crazy Ass Moments account for everything you can imagine, from Transformers to, I don't know, Bewitched or something, just every cultural phenomenon possible. And then I started up mine because, like, you know, it felt at the time it was very natural to me. I wasn't sitting around like, I gotta jump on this. It was like, you know what genre has a lot of crazy ass moments? And we do.
What's that?
We do. Nu metal. We have so many crazy ass moments. And I think that this was because as, like, the post, not post grunge, but the post era wise grunge movement, we fashioned ourselves, nu metal fashioned itself as a very deliberate rebuke to grunge's anti-commercialism. grunge was all about turning down opportunities because you didn't want to sell out. And then nu metal came along and we're like, we will do fucking whatever you want. We will do anything. We will sign with clothing brands. We will go on MTV every single day forever. We'll do webcasts. We'll do anything you need to make shit blow up for us. And as a result, like, it produced this insane array of moments and stuff, like, so dense, so deep that people who otherwise thought they were fans of the band were like, I don't remember this at all. Like, I just put out the Korn Coming Undone, Lean With It, Rock With It official matchup of between Korn and Dem franchise boys. And it was like,
that's wild as fuck.
It was like, holy. Yeah. Wow. It did happen. It's one of those things where it's like, you can't believe it happened, but also, like, of course it happened.
Of course.
All of these bands are just saying yes to everything, and it just produced this insane cornucopia of crazy ass moments that I don't know. Every time I think to myself, like, I've seen them all, and there goes another one.
Yeah, and I've been discovering a lot through the account. I mean, speaking to, you know, that mashup of, okay, well, let me say this. I think nu metal was, in fact, that era peak culture, number one. I think it was peak culture. They did everything from fashion to music. I had no idea when I went back and looked at it. They were so ahead of their time, all of these bands. And number two, that, you know, collaboration between corporations and the bands themselves, example being one of my favorite video games was PsyOps or PsyOp, the Mindgate Conspiracy. I used to play that. And Cold did the soundtrack for the video game. And this was back in 2004.
One song, With My Mind. Have you heard the other three Midway songs?
With My Mind and Came All the Way, I want to say.
No, different. Dude. Have you heard?
See, I don't know.
Midway Games. Oh, I love this for you. Midway Games commissioned three songs for three different video games.
Okay.
So, With My Mind by Cold, Immortal by Edema for Mortal Kombat Deadly Alliance, and Ride the Bat Rack by Dry Kill Logic for MLB Slugfest. And that last song, the Dry Kill Logic song, is fucking so amazing. It's so funny. Like, you have got to jump off this and look that up as soon as we're done here. All three tracks are kind of funny in their own way. The Cold one's pretty damn good. The Edema one is hilarious. They don't know it is, but it's really funny. And then the Dry Kill Logic one is actually, like, really, really funny. You got to look them all up when you're done here. But go on with what you were saying.
No, that's basically it. I mean, that's unreal because I'm going to take note of that. I mean, I would go down these YouTube rabbit holes and find all of these. Well, really, I'm finding them via you now. I mean, I'm not even looking into it anymore. I just go to your account. So
yeah,
that's basically it.
It's an interesting thing because it's like, You do a lot. It's great. I love doing it. I really do love cataloging and sharing these moments with people. But I always try to make sure every day I'm platforming one band, at least one band that most of my audience will have never heard of. Like, that's really the only thing that actually matters, because right now we are just drowning in content. And it's something that I have to think about my responsibility to. When you think about AI and generative AI as being something that literally just recycles past materials into a new-ish thing, it's like, it's a lot of just what I do. Is I'm out here, I'm just strip mining YouTube for new content to share with people. And it's like that can't be, like, all I'm doing, you know, like strip mining old content and selling t-shirts off it. That's fucking disgusting. So I'm always working really hard to try to make sure I'm platforming either really old, like, legacy bands that didn't get the shine they needed, or new bands that just need someone to just need to know someone out there is listening, because it's just hard out here for that. And I think it would be really irresponsible, really remiss of me to not bother doing that. So I try to make that a big part of it, of what I'm doing.
So yeah, speaking to that point, how do you balance the preservation of nu metal's original spirit with the introduction of new influences and artists?
Well, here's the thing about modern day content culture. I hesitate to even call it culture. The problem with modern day content creation is that every single creative person, every artist probably in the world feels like that they have to produce content. So if you're a musician, if you want to be a musician, you're under this intense pressure to release whatever it is you've made right away, immediately. In the 90s, in the 2000s, bands would cut a demo, right? And then that demo would get shopped. And then that demo would hopefully get picked up by a label. And then you'd go to just do it with a producer and you would fix those demos. You would redo those demos. You would workshop those demos. You might go on the fucking road. You might road test those demos. There were so many steps between you creating the music and you putting music out for anyone to hear. Now, in order to feel like you're not drowning, you're not being lost in the shuffle, you cut the demo, ship it off to get a decent mix and master, and put it out like right away. And so, I mean, oftentimes that end product cannot be very good. So I think that it's my responsibility to try to listen in and hear, like, what I'm looking for when I'm looking for like an artist to really platform, really get behind and support, is not necessarily great or even good music. I just want clarity of intent, right? And inspiration. It's like, can I hear that they're going for something? Like, maybe they're not there yet, but are they heading in that direction? Are they going in the right direction? And that to me is more important now than actual quality of the music. Plus, if you're like assessing the quality of the music, if you ever tried to listen to like the first Korn album with virgin ears, it sounds terrible, right? Like, imagine you were like a rock critic raised on the Beatles and the Stones, and you hear that first Korn album for the first time, you'd be like, what is this shit? Like, to dismiss things out of hand because they don't necessarily fit like what you would expect good art to be,
sure,
is where you're gonna miss out on what it actually is good art.
Well, look, that is true. And I guess, you know, piggybacking off that point, you know, what role do you think social media plays in the revival and transformation of music genres, especially nu metal? I mean, because that really is the crux of all of this, right? I mean, it's been talked to death, but, you know, the rapid pace of content. What role would you say social media plays in all of this, for better or for worse?
I mean, I'm waging war on social media, because when you add, like, my to me, what I think the last rock-ish, like rock-related music scene to really take off would have been emo revival and like the emo rap phenomenon, which came about in like 2016. And what you had at the time was you had a platform called SoundCloud. And SoundCloud, for all its faults, was at the end of the day about listening to the music. That was the goal of that platform, is you'd listen to a song, you'd engage with the music. Now, what social media companies have realized in the wake of TikTok's unbelievable success is it is way more in their best interest to prevent people from engaging with anything else than that platform, to just stay only in that platform. TikTok is I think TikTok is who invented that idea, which is absolutely fucking genius if you are a shareholder in TikTok. But otherwise, you can't make a broader cultural movement happen, because with TikTok, you might stumble on something on TikTok that does resonate with you in some way, but then you just go like that. Your thumb just goes whoop and it's gone. Gone.
You can't
pull people off that platform. And every other social media platform has taken notice of this and started to retool their own systems to be similar to this, to where it's like, we got to lock people in on this. And when you think about it pragmatically, that makes sense. Why would you want people to click a link, leave your platform, no longer be looking at ads on your platform, no longer be engaging with your platform? Why would you want people to leave your platform? That was like the innovation that I think that was created by TikTok and adapted by everyone else, was it's like, keep people boxed in, keep them contained, keep them locked up. So when I work to try to platform artists and music and bands and create a sense of community, I have to like work at it. And the rewards are not, the rewards sometimes are not very tangible, but when the rewards come in, they put like 8 years of like fuel back in me. Like I was posted this one band, wish I had their name in my head right now, but the artist, he's like 19, DMs me the next day. He's like, you've changed my life. There are people talking about my music now. I got fans and artists I've looked up to my entire life have now followed me on this platform. I'm like, I'm the happiest I feel like I've ever been. You've really done so much good for me. And I'm like, yes, what the fuck I'm talking about? That's what I'm fucking talking about, baby. Because that's it. Fashion, when you start out, if you know what's the same deal, though? When you're starting out in art and when you're trying to practice art on a professional scale, all you want is to know that somebody cares. And you live for that moment when you feel like somebody really reaches down and goes like, this is valid. You're valid. What you're doing has a point. You're on your way to something. And I can be that to younger artists. And that to me is, that's like all the retweets, all the virality, all the t-shirt sales, all that shit is so secondary to just like being what artists need now, which is an advocate. And that's all I'm really actually trying to do.
Yeah. And I, you know, I'm curious if you've had, you know, any artists or particularly inspiring, you know, moments like that, as you mentioned. I mean, could you discuss maybe a moment that really impressed you or surprised you, you know, running in the course of running this account?
Oh, yeah. There's this band named called Cheem. And I talk about this band every day. I always find myself talking about this band every day because I love them so much. But they just DM'd me cold, like a long time ago, too, about their music. And it blew my mind. And this is a band that's been at it. So this is on their like fourth or fifth album, I think, is called Guilty Pleasure, that came out last year or 2 years ago now. And it's one of those albums that just hits you and you get it like right away. The melodies are there. The hooks are full. There's good songwriting. It's trim. It's to the point. And it does everything that I want out of new metal today, because it takes these influences that include new metal, right? But are also pop punk, emo, Japanese rock and metal music, hyper pop. It boxes all these ideas up into a package that just hits you like it's always existed. Just pop music. You're like, yeah, oh, of course, duh. But we've always been doing this, but they haven't. It's like, I've never heard anything like it before. And I think that's like my all-time favorite music discovery moment. But then there's also this band in the United Kingdom called Black Coast that have sent me their music. And I've spent like a lot of time. It's really good. They have this EP out, self-titled. And I've spent a lot of time pushing them, talking them up, showing them around. And they just played a Bloodstock music festival out in the United Kingdom. And it was like their first professionally recorded show. And I was like, fuck yeah, guys. Hell yeah. Because like at the end of the day, like I'm sure you saw the news about Pitchfork.
Yeah, being integrated, or I should say maybe dissolved, in the course of combining.
Dissolved, Jesus. Jeez. But like, integrated. Yeah, basically being integrated. You know, being crippled, and the absolute state of everyone around that, of just the unbelievable amounts of like gloom and doom surrounding that. And to me, it's like, okay, this is it. This is an opportunity. What's, you know, what, because there's this, like, if you're on Twitter a lot, really any social media almost a lot, you get this idea that like everything is bad forever and we're all going to die. And to me, it's like, no. Everything's bad for you forever and you're going to die. Like, I'm going to figure this shit out. So to me, it's like, if Pitchfork's on the decline, if these old guardians and gatekeepers and standards for music, music publications, music journalism are on their way out, what can we bring in the meantime? And I'm not necessarily saying I might have something better here. At the end of the day, I'm still predominantly a new metal nostalgia page, whether I want to be or not. Like that, I got to face facts. That's predominantly what I am right now. But what can I do with just enough determination, resolve, and love? I didn't have a better word to put there. I love the music so much that I want to see something better for people that want to make it.
Sure. And what do you think are the implications of that Pitchfork scenario? So what do you think the implications are, and what might it have been a result of? Do you think AI, like most people would say, or?
The troubling thing with me, so I will die for Pitchfork. Pitchfork has changed my life for the better so many times. It's inconceivable, actually, just how much good that website has done for me. Literally, when they re-reviewed Deftones' White Pony album in 2017, Word to Ian Cohen, that was what unlocked in my mind the idea that nu metal could be good. I didn't even realize until that review happened. So pretty much everything that I've got going today is a consequence of that review, which is insane to even think about. But that's my favorite website ever. It'd be like my second or third biggest argument for why the website, or the internet in general, has been a net good on humanity. Like, I love that. I adore that website. And I just haven't given myself time to be sad about what's going on, because I'm just trying to get too focused, too locked in on what I can do to make tomorrow better, because I'm just like aging as I'm growing up and aging with all of my peers and people I've looked up to, and we're all getting into our 30s and 40s. I'm just watching this impending sense of doom descend on everybody. And I want to break through that at all costs. You know what I mean? Like, you understand how it is. As someone who's a creative in their own right and someone that wants to make things happen, you have to, at some point, you've got to stop doom posting and just knuckle up and figure it out.
Yeah, it's like, as they say, the only way out is through.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no more truth than that. You know, it's interesting. Before we talk about nu metal a little bit more and kind of the future as you see it, you know, I wanna talk a little bit more about this. But I'm having a hard time, to your point, like as I get older, wrapping my head around all of these evolutions, revivals, et cetera. It's too much. And just so you know where I'm coming from, like I said, you know, when I started my career in art, I would say a couple years after I got out of college, the medium was fashion. Now it's evolved into a plethora of other things, you know, art installations, things like that. But with regards to the people that I was working with, I was collaborating with brands that were popular during the nu metal era. I relaunched JNCO, the jeans brand at the time, some years ago.
Oh, shit.
I relaunched Ed Hardy many years ago. I would say about four or five years ago now.
I'm not familiar.
But I did these things authentically.
Damn.
Yeah, I did these things authentically because everybody at the time was saying, you know, how atrocious these things were. And I said, no, I have a vision for this. That's not ironic. That actually I would like to. So the reason I say that is.
Billie Eilish.
Yeah, of course.
I've worked with Billie Eilish. I did her music video, All the Good Girls Go to Hell. I worked on that.
Oh, and the production. That's sick.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's so cool. She's and they start watching it and she starts giving the notes and everyone, one by one, everyone's like, that's a good idea too. Yeah. We should have done it. Like, yeah, all right. We should have done it like that. They're all really good notes. It was like, everyone's just getting schooled by this like 17-year-old girl. So she's awesome though. And I bet she loves nu metal.
Very prescient. I mean, everything that with fashion related goes through her stylist at the time, but ultimately her style was better than anything I'd ever seen in my entire life. I'm not joking as it pertains to like having worked in the fashion industry. But I say all that to say this, to kind of segue, and I want to get your philosophical thoughts on this. I can't keep up. Do you think that nu metal is the final revival? Do you think that this is it before we just turn into robots? Because I'm really having a hard time.
So here's the thing about nu metal and the idea of nu metal revival. It doesn't quite jive with me. Nu metal was created as a response to the rapid evolution of funk and hip hop and rap music in the mainstream. This was guys that were fans of Cypress Hill and NWA. And Ice Cube getting together in a garage and in warehouses and in rehearsal spaces and going like, we can do that. Not like becoming rap, but being like, we're metal musicians. We make metal music. We can do that too. And then doing it and pulling it off and being rewarded as such for their adventurousness by becoming the biggest genre of hard, heavy music by the turn of the century. So to me, and to me, that should have never ended. I genuinely, deeply believe that rock's fall from mainstream grace, the fact that rock music does not have a foothold in the pop charts anymore, is because we had this need to kill nu metal. Because nu metal was supposed to be our stage of evolution, where we could take what we want from other genres and continue to keep us. Think about how much nu metal, it sounds like industrial, and how much house is in nu metal, how much screamo is in nu metal, how much post-hardcore is in nu metal. Think about that. Like, we could take from all these genres. It's why to this day you argue about At the Drive-In and Glassjaw's, like, are they, and from First to Last, like, are these bands nu metal? Like, that's what we could do. We could take from all of that. And then when they decided to put nu metal down like a dog and decided it had to be something that was killed, we ended up scattered into all these different tribes, and now what we have now is what, like, modern rock? Like, what do we even have now? Like, what we have now is one band every 4 years becomes moderately commercially successful, and then every band after has to sound exactly like them. Like, we still have these young bands out here writing Bring Me the Horizon songs. Give it up. Write a different song. There's only so many of these choruses you can push out there. Enough. So to me, like, when it comes to like nu metal revival and why I war so hard on the idea of being nostalgic is because this is not something that should have died. Nobody talks about, like, I don't know. It doesn't, like, you don't hear as many people talk about like rap revival, because rap music never died. It was allowed to continue to take elements from different things. Like, when it became emo rap, and like that was allowed to happen. It wasn't suddenly like this other thing. It was emo rap. Yeah, why the fuck not? Sure, you could sample Under Oath. Why not? And then that was, you know, and people complained, sure, but it took off. It still took off. You can't do that with rock music. Rock music has these like hard borders around everything, these very thick lines that you can't cross. Nu metal was the attempt to dissolve those lines. And I don't know, maybe it's because of its embrace of historically black styles of music that was decided upon as not okay. Maybe it felt like we had to defend rock music from such outside influences. Who's to say, really? But to me, it's just this, it's this historical injustice, honestly, that we just gave up our spirit of innovation like that for fucking nothing. For nothing. Like, why did we do that?
I was thinking very sensible.
You know what? Yeah. I was thinking literally today, because I just posted a clip of Flyleaf doing the song I'm So Sick on a Fuse Daily Download, and I'm thinking to myself, like, this group was fusing emo and nu metal. Because I'm like, they're wearing tight clothes. They're singing like these emo melodies, but they're playing fucking riffs. Like they're playing some metal riffs. I'm like, they were onto something on their own. And of course, like that's like one of like only a couple songs of them we got that did that. But to me, it's like you could have done a whole genre like that where it's like Evanescence, but heavy, like heavier Evanescence. It's crazy to me. It's crazy to me that we just were like, no, never mind. We're active rock now.
Maybe you just made a case, because I love how you articulated the entirety of the why, but you might have made a case for why nu metal is the be-all end-all of revivals, because it really, as I said earlier, kind of did everything in a prescient way first. And, you know, it seems the more relevant than ever, living through a time where there are no boundaries for the most part, there are no, you know, defining genres and boxes. Nu metal might be the most relevant of all genres, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Everyone's so siloed now, but...
Yeah, it is. Because that was going to be... That's what should have been what carried us through the generations, was that ability. Because the thing about me is, and I feel like you could probably relate, is I'll never connect to anything more than I can connect to guitar music. That's just where my heart is at. I appreciate all kinds of different genres and styles. I love a lot of dance music. I love a lot of pop music. I love a lot of rap music. But I need guitars. It's just that's my blood, is guitar music. And nu metal was us saying, like, hey, we could do anything. We could do anything. And when was the last time you felt like rock music had that spirit? Like, pff, we could do anything. No, now it's like, God, I hope Spotify playlists us. Please let Spotify playlist us. 23 years ago, you picked up a guitar and you'd say to your friends, be like, we're going to be fucking millionaires. Do you think there's any young rock band today that's like, we're going to be millionaires? No, it's like, boy, this would be great to have as a moderately nice side hustle. And that's bullshit. That's bullshit. It's absolutely nonsense. And people want to say, like, people want to figure out why, like, culture doesn't inspire like it used to, or like why music's not as good as it used to be. And it's like, dude, we've quashed the dreams of this generation. It's insane that we have to let people flounder. And you know what's crazy is even rap music is going in that direction, where people are suddenly making less money doing that. And there are closing down of possibilities for that. So... I just love music and music journalism, honestly. I love both of those things too much to just throw up my hands and be like, it's over. We're done. Nuclear holocaust, AI apocalypse. We're done. It's over. I just can't do it. I won't.
Well, it could almost be generational. I mean, that's an easy out for me to say, but you know, there is a lot of nihilism now that I think didn't exist back when you and I were coming of age. That nihilism was not present. Now you see so much of it on the internet. I might relate to Gen Z culture in so many ways, because I think they both, millennial and Gen Z culture, inform one another in some ways. You know, some people do kind of fall off into adulthood, but that's not relevant, I think, to you and I. And I want to get your opinion on this, because what are you saying? Because you have this streak of optimism, right? And I share that. What do you see as the main difference between where you're coming from, maybe as a millennial and a Gen Z, for example? I don't mean to paint with a very broad brushstroke, but I'm curious as to what your thoughts are.
I think that being the millennial age that I am, which is 31, so death's door, gives me this perspective to where it's like, I know how it used to be, and I understand what it's like now. So I was around during the era in which making music, making guitar music was still a dream, still very much a difficult aspiration, but you could do it and make a good living or even a killing at it. Right. Sure. So I know how it was. And I know how it used to. I know it used to be tour buses, $400,000 music videos, $1 million, you know, promo packages and stuff. Like, it used to be like that. And now but I also have enough perspective towards the younger end of the demographic to know how it is right now, which is very much like atomized, every man for himself. Do, you know, basically like, don't even bother. You're not going to get anywhere. The scope and the feeling is that, like, it's over. You know, we missed out. And when you say optimism, I don't know if what goes on with me is necessarily optimism as much as it is determination, because it almost feels like, I don't know, like militaristic or something, where it's like, I adore this stuff too much to just like let it become something where we're like, man, remember that first Slipknot album? Man, that was good, right? Yeah, that was great. Like, I love, don't get me wrong, I love celebrating the classics. The classics are a classic for a reason. Just wrote a whole list. The top of that list is, you know, Slipknot and Korn and Linkin Park and Deftones, and I'll die about all those bands. But also, I think it would be a betrayal to the spirit of nu metal to ever let it become a remember the good old days type movement. And I don't know. I just can't let myself get caught up by that idea that it's just all going to get worse forever now. I just won't do it.
That's a perfect segue. Let's speak to that. Let's transition back into the professional work here. How do you envision the future of nu metal, both in the digital space and in the broader music industry?
I think it's going to be LGBTQ plus people integrating heavy guitars into hype pop music to express the way that they feel about current events and stuff. And that will comprise like maybe the heavier side of it. And it's something to really keep your ear towards. Nu metal, and even in its peak era, was always very gay, very feminine. That you had their biggest band singing about fucking each other, and you had bands like Orgy wearing crazy makeup. Even like Machine Head was doing wild shiny suit outfits and hair and stuff. And but it, you know, it was predominantly dominated by straight white people. So I think that the idea of giving those keys over to the actual LGBTQ people that find all that stuff so inspiring and so interesting now, and letting them drive that car, could produce some really brilliant music. It just won't sound like, you know, you might think it's going to sound. But like I said, like I present a very inclusive, very open platform. I want to find out what nu metal sounds like tomorrow and not what it used to sound like. That's when people come at me and are like, how is this nu metal? How is that nu metal? I'm always, you know, working on like drawing the lines and pulling the threads and making sure there is some connection. I'm not going to post the new Ariana Grande song, but at the same time, it's like I'm asking people to have an open mind about it, because it's the only way we're going to get anywhere.
Well, that's very true. And you brought up a bunch of very interesting points and, you know, interesting bands too, like Orgy. I was looking at Orgy the other day, actually, and their performances, totally off topic, but just the way they did the makeup, the hair.
It looks so, you know, cool.
Everything. It was better than, honestly, the Scene era, if I could say so myself. I mean, I love the hair and the styles from the MySpace Scene era, but when I'm looking at Orgy, I'm like, wait a second.
The motherfuckers were wearing, but you get to the Scene era and the motherfuckers was doing, you know, crazy hair and wearing t-shirt and jeans. Orgy were going full head to toe, and they were awarded from it. Jay Gordon was a Calvin Klein model, was in Calvin Klein ads.
I did not know that.
Jay Gordon was in Calvin Klein. The other, his name is getting away from me, and I'm sorry, Ryan Shuck was also in Calvin Klein ads, and so was David Silvera, a drummer from Korn. He was in some Calvin Klein ads. Very controversial, that last one, but that was the deal. Like, it was very fashionable, and I feel like we should actually talk more about fashion, because this is funny. This keeps happening to me, and I'm afraid it's happening to me right now, where people come ask me to speak on different nu metal stuff, and I will get, as you've probably seen, very passionate about the music side of things and the culture and the future of nu metal and stuff like that. And then the article comes out and it is a fashion article. It's in the style section. And I'm like, oh, fuck, this has already happened. I've been in the New York Times. I've been in GQ. And both times I did these huge interviews about music and I get reduced to like a little bit of a mention. Because at some point in that interview, they're like, what about the fashion? I'm like, yeah, trip pants and leather and stuff, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So I do need to know, like, is this a fashion podcast? Are we talking fashion here or what?
Let's speak to it. Let's speak to it because we're at the intersection of everything. So I think it's important to know, you know, if they wish, I mean, you can't really talk about nu metal without talking about the fashion. I understand, just like you can't talk about the scene era without talking about the fashion, the girl jeans, et cetera, you know, the Tony and Guy hairstyles. We get it. So I want to hear exactly kind of what they've mentioned to you about that, what questions they've had for you, but your opinion. If you could just opine on that in general, I'd love to hear it.
Nu metal fashion was just the absolute best. The best. Because as a differentiator from a lot of other eras of metal was, I think nu metal more than any other era of rock music, you all had to look totally different. So you could say like, yeah, it was about wearing big pants, but Slipknot were wearing jumpsuits and all their own masks, and Orgy were dressing down like David Bowie in The Matrix or something. And you had Korn, they were wearing the leather kilts and playing bagpipes and dressing hip hop. And then you had like Limp Bizkit with Wes Borland, who literally look different every tour in ways that are just so bizarre. You had Mudvayne with their different makeups and Chad Gray's enormously long blue twisty beard. And you also had like smaller bands like American Head Charge, who had this ridiculous like Psycho Circus meets Ozfest type outfit getups, or Playmo is a French nu metal band who did like the Slipknot jumpsuit thing, but all their jumpsuits were in primary bold colors and different colors for each of them. And I always thought that looked super fly. And then they had like big anime influences and really dense like art and ideas. And I think and then you have bands like Papa Roach, where it was just all black dickies. And that was really fly too, honestly. Like, I thought it was really cool that all these bands had looks. Because it's like when they hit the stage, before you even heard a note, like you knew they were on business. They were about it. They were not coming out there to like play songs. You know, they were out there to be a force. And if a band comes on stage and everyone's dickied down, just t-shirt and work pants, same pairs of Adidases, like, you know, like this is a unit. They're standing for something. And that really, to me, and I'm sure you can relate to this, when a band comes out and they look like they're just wearing what they were wearing at their day job, you're like, fuck them, right? Like, you're so out. Like, does this matter to you or not?
Why are you wearing jeans?
I hate a t-shirt and jeans ass band. Like, I don't know what else to say. I hate a t-shirt and jeans ass band.
There needs to be iconography. I mean, I would say there's a significant, the best bands nowadays, in my opinion, that understand culture well. Contemporary bands, Bring Me the Horizon, because Ali understands fashion culture incredibly well. I say that because there's a lot of bands from the 2000s and 2010 era, not nu metal, who for all intents and purposes still look like they did 10, 15 years ago, but the iconography is lost. And I agree with you wholly. The iconography of the nu metal bands, specifically Slipknot, their branding, their marketing, it goes without saying. I mean, it transcends everything. So I agree. Like, when I see a band who looks like they don't have a very clear direction as it pertains to their costuming, if you want to call it that,
yeah,
pertains to their fashion, I think there could be something to be said there for sure.
And you think about how many modern bands go huge distances just by having really densely plotted out looks, like Sleep Token, where, yeah, even though I cannot recall any song of theirs I've ever heard, I know what they look like. And that does count for something. And Bring Me the Horizon's a funny one, because I feel like I rag on them quite a bit. But the trouble that they have, the unfortunate position they're in, is that they're peerless. Like, they're big in a way that they don't have anyone around them to maybe take some of that heat. Like, for nu metal, it was like, hey, you had Limp Bizkit and Korn and Cold Chamber and Fear Factory and Disturbed and Godsmack, and you had all these bands that were duking it out in the same arena. Whereas with Bring Me the Horizon, it's like them and I don't know, Bad Omens, like them and everyone else. And so they, you know, they take a ton of flack, but it's like that's another thing where it's like there should be five different Bring Me the Horizons all competing in that same arena rather than this one band that's on every festival and every tour. It's not fair to them, honestly, because they are good.
Well, you made your point.
They make good music. It's just the type of music that they make is surrounded by other music that just sounds like them.
That's fair. But don't you think you kind of made a very articulate point in that you said, you know, when we're talking to nu metal has very much transcended the era in which it resided. The scene era did not. And I mean, if we're talking about scene era bands, I was a connoisseur to the point that you feel about nu metal. I truly was for post-hardcore. And Bring Me the Horizon was the one act that transcended in such a monumental, an order of magnitude. No other band from that era could really compare.
And they were new
and
metal.
I think that's a fair assessment.
They were doing Slipknot covers in Russia when they were, you know, like all in their teens. Like this, that was a band infused with the spirit of new metal. And I know that's true
that.
Because they have felt they have taken the liberty throughout their career to sound different, including and to the point of is when you get to like Post-Human. And Amo and stuff, and now they're just they sound a lot like nu metal. And I actually like their someone had just sent me their latest song, the Kool-Aid one, yesterday, and I was like, holy shit, nu metal Bring Me the Horizon is back, you know. And that's to their benefit, is that you might be able to feel like you can pigeonhole them into a sound, but when you take in the breadth of their catalog, it's like it provokes argument. I just feel like someone yesterday was like, Amo is the shittiest fucking album they've ever made, and I'm like, it's my favorite of theirs. So that's great.
Yeah, that's
though.
An insane
that is
take.
Great.
Yeah, it is easily one of my favorites. That is an incredibly insane take. Whoever said that, I have to push back wholeheartedly.
That's good. It's good that you can fight like this over a band.
Discourse is great.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I want to touch back on that. I want to go forward with this, but touch back on that since we were on fashion. I want to kind of get your take on nu metal fashion as it not applies to the bands themselves, but it applies to fashion culture. Let's talk about that, because Y2K culture in fashion has come back. I'm going to be honest with you. I was kind of early in doing these collabs and stuff.
Dude, I was just Y2K, thinking to myself, like, know, how did you get with Junko?
Well, the story behind that was it was licensed at the time, and the original owner was simply licensing it, had no longer was running the operations day to day. So fortunately, the licensee at the time was a very nice guy and saw my vision. I was just getting started. He saw my vision for what I wanted to do, said, you know, we'll fund the development of the collection, just run with it. And I was able to do it. I was able to handle the marketing. It got very sensational press, did very well. And that's what led to doing the other ones. But that's what happened. And the owner, they told me actually the owner liked it so much that he decided to effectively revoke the license and go back to operating it. So some years later, they're operating again. I believe it's the gentleman's daughter. So it's very much a family.
I need all of these. Oh, this flame shirt. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You're snapping.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's like, look, that was such an iconic brand, and it being licensed at the time, I was like, you know, there's something to be said here. But like I said, Kirk, I was early, because I think Y2K is way more popular now than it was when I did that collab some years ago. You know what I mean? That's what I struggle with.
Well, first of all, let's talk pants. Can we talk pants?
We absolutely can talk pants.
The struggle with pants is, to me, this is an opinion thing, is if your pants are making a statement, you're on thin ice. Hmm. I personally feel like when the pants are making the big statement, you got to like kind of deliver on something, because that's just like, okay, one time I went out and I did karaoke and I wore leather pants, and I feel like that was really fucking stupid, because when you're wearing leather pants, you're elevating yourself amongst the room. And you're doing karaoke.
You are.
So it's like, who the fuck is this guy? Oh, look at leather pants up here doing karaoke. It's the same thing with JNCOs. You walk in a room with some JNCOs on, you are making a statement. And it's like JNCOs, and honestly, JNCOs are like the ultimate, like they're a metaphor for nu metal itself. You can't ironically rock a pair of JNCOs. You look twice as dumb. You go all out or you got nothing. Like I got this.
It's true.
When I DJ, what I wear when I DJ is I wear these fucking huge button-up print shirts. So I wear these.
I remember those so well.
I wear these, and I wear them with some mesh gloves and, like, these candy. The fan made these for me. It's like these candy wristbands that say, like, New Metal Agenda on them. And I wear that, and I go, and I just, as soon as I walk in, as soon as you look at me, you're like, okay, he's not playing around about this. Like, he's going to get on these decks, he's going to spin some Linkin Park, he's going to spin some Orgy, and he's going to live for every second of that. You know what I mean?
I do, completely. Well, you've always gone, you've clearly gone hard. Look, you can't have the passion for it without being authentic, and that's something undoubtedly you are.
No.
First of all, I remember those shirts well. I just want to say that. I remember going into the store when I was a little kid and seeing those anime shirts.
So many.
They were pretty. Please, let's see.
This is Pete right here. This belongs to a franchise. It's not like a generic character. This is actually from a series. I can't remember what it was offhand. But because people think shirts like that, oh, is this a video podcast or just audio?
Sure. Oh, this is a video and audio.
Oh,
yeah.
Great. What's funny, though, is because people think of shirts like that as like a joke. So I got it for $20. And I looked it up later. It's a $300 shirt.
Yeah.
And the thing is, too, is it's like you look at shirts like that and you're like, whack, lame, loser shit. When I rock these, people are like, bro, you are suited out. You are killing the game right now. Because if you go head to toe with that, and you really commit to it, people are like, I wish I could dress like that. You know? Like, do you remember the era?
100%.
Do you remember the John Elliott era where it was like joggers, really expensive white tees, short sleeve hoodies? Oh, the Stan Smith era.
Yeah, I would say mid 2010, somewhere around that.
Yes. Yeah. Where it was literally like just dress as boring as possible.
Yeah.
And spend like $58 on an engineered garments black t-shirt. And you like are always like you're kind of in the room trying to figure out if anyone knows, like, hey. This is garments. Anyone see the tag?
That's the only way you would know. I mean, if you live in LA, yeah, people are going to have a kind of understanding maybe, but if you're anywhere else in the world, no one's going to give a shit. That was the reality back then.
It was such a trash. So, it was such a trash,
you know.
And now, to me at least, like the joy I get out of dressing every day is like making you fucking see it. And if you wear JNCOs, like you got to have an opinion on that. Everyone around you is going to have an opinion on that. You wear a nice pair of like, what was the big, like, what were the jeans? It was, like, the big jeans back in the day. Like, the Japanese, one of those Japanese brands.
Was it a Selvedge denim brand?
Oh, my God. You couldn't wash them.
Avizu or perhaps G-Star Raw. I think Avizu is probably, it was the most popular, but there were tons. I mean, during the Selvedge era, there were tons. Like, Ironhead, everything.
I remember reading, like, the way to clean a Selvedge pair of jeans. You wear them into the ocean, and then you dry by standing on the shore for a certain amount of time. And that's when I was like, all right, well, I'm out on this. I'm just going to go to JCPenney and let the Lord guide me because I'm done. I can't do this anymore. But I really prefer it the way it is now because it's like, hey, if I walk out of that room and you look to your friend and you're like, didn't he look like a dork? Fine with me. I was there. Can't say I wasn't there. I was there.
So speak to that because we're talking about the maximal era of dressing, which came about really recently. And I honestly don't even think it was, like I said, when I did that JNCO collaboration. I'm talking maybe in the past few years, maybe like during 2020 when everybody was on the internet for so long. What do you think about that confluence of factors that's led to the Y2K revival as it pertains to mainstream fashion? Because that's really... I'm loving it, but I think, you know, you're just as much a fashion guy now, whether you want to be or not.
Actually do adore new metal fashion, and I have a collection of vintage new metal tees back there, and I'm very proud of my button-up shirts, and I accessorize and stuff. Like, I don't keep a ball necklace, like, right here, just in case. Like, I fucking adore new metal fashion and dressing new metal. You know what I have that is fucking spectacular is a pair of
let's show them. We gotta show them.
All right. So these, okay.
Vaguely, but bring him in, so, and everybody is going to be stunned.
My girlfriend
They're
rocks
not ready.
Better than I do, but the Godsmack hockey jersey, right?
Oh, bro, let me tell you.
Talk about it.
Wow. Well, I'm sure that that's, let me just say, that does not mean straight edge. Let's clarify that.
No, it
that's
does
probably
not. Three
some...
X's. No.
That no. does not. Okay. Nu Metal is on a different level.
Habitual relapser is what that means.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I'm straight edge personally, and I just want to clarify that for, you know.
And then what do they know about shit, the leather Junkos? What do they know about the
Are you serious?
The big leg leather Junkos. And what I love about those might be my favorite pants. Why I love those so much is, like, you want to make a statement? I'm not just wearing Junkos. I'm wearing leather Junkos. Show respect.
Yes, sir.
Show respect.
What boots are we – what are we styling those with? I have to know. What are we styling those with in terms of shoes?
Like kicks?
Mm-hmm. Everyone is getting schooled right now on Nu Metal fashion, and I hope they're prepared for that.
It's mainly to go with two things. So the thing about Nu Metal is you want the kicks to be fucked, right? No one's going for those crisp kicks, right? So you either got the Adidas Super Modifieds, and these they put out a corn version of these. Skip that. Get the classic black-white Adidas Super Modifieds. Doug Robb of Hoobastank saw those and was like, yeah, I used to have those. Or you get yourself a fat-ass pair of DC shoes, right? This was a collabo.
Sick.
I don't remember with who, but I picked these up off of Urban Outfitters, who were ahead of it when they put them on there, but they went on sale because nobody was buying them yet. This was like 2020. And so you want a big ass pair of those, and you'll just drive. You would be shocked like how much good conversation you can drive just by wearing shoes like that. Like literally, like I was talking to Doug and the guitarist Dan from Hoobastank, and they're like, bro, they're like, oh my God, I remember those shoes. I was like, yeah. So, and then of course you run into people and be like, oh man, the DVSs. I had the DVSs as a kid. I love those. And also like, if you're wearing Junkos, you kind of got to put on a fat ass shoe under those. It's like we were talking about, like you're going all the way. You can't pair those with like some New Balances. Like you go hard, bro.
Well, you have to commit. You have to commit. And mind you, those are way more esoteric than the Osiris D3s. I think the Osiris D3, you know,
need a pair of those.
But speaking to those, you know, that's super interesting, though. I mean, do you feel like it's relegated itself to silos in terms of as it pertains to Nu Metal music and fashion? Are we talking parties in LA, like very siloed? Or are you seeing the culture spread just from being the CEO of Nu Metal? Are you seeing the culture spread?
What I think is interesting about Nu Metal fashion, Y2K fashion, all of these things is it is still not cool. Like it might be cool to engage with, like it's a museum exhibit or something, to stand behind the glass and go like, ah, big pants, yes. But to actually put these things on, to listen to the music, to commit, you have to risk looking like a fucking idiot. You have to take that chance. And then, of course, you end up looking cool anyway. That's how I always am. People wish they could be me. They can't because I commit. I am not afraid to be cringe. I'm not afraid to go on your podcast and scream and yell about the future of music for 45 minutes because I commit. I'm genuine. You're genuine. I know you're genuine. I saw the Junko collection. That would not have worked if you had been ironic about it. You could have, couldn't you? You could have.
Yeah.
You could have been ironic.
I told myself going in, I said, I will not be ironic. I said, I'm going to take all this shit seriously. Like I autistically do it as everything else in my life.
Shirt,
like, completely.
With the classic Junko logo and the flame accents around the sides, I was like, smoking like that, like perfect. You changed just enough and you did justice to that era. And it's like, that's what resonates is people. It's just too easy now to be arch and reposed and better than everything and a culture and just a critic on your own times. And it's more fun to just go head first, go all in.
I just need everybody, the audience who is listening to this podcast, just to say that I got the biggest compliment from Kirk as it pertains to my work, and he would know. So everyone needs to take note of this right now and just, you know, flood me with compliments.
Like the resonant stuff to me, I think like you achieved, I think that we achieve all of the emotional acuity that we need by the time we're like 13. And then after we're 13, we are building layers of remove atop that. To get away from that emotional vulnerability. because when I was 13 and I heard Paper Cut by Linkin Park for the first time, I was like, this is pretty much everything. Like, they've got it figured out. And then as I grew older, I get to be about, you know, like 18, 19, 20. I'm listening to the fucking National or Arcade Fire or something. And am I really hitting the emotional resonance harder than Linkin Park work? No. And then I had to get all the way up to being like 29 and 30 to realize like they were doing it. They were hitting it right the first time and go back to that. And people are just afraid to confront that version of themselves. Like anytime I bring up or post about like of all the songs too, like Last Resort by Papa Roach is one. I've called it the second greatest nu metal song of all time before. I'll stand by it today. It is a masterpiece of a song, one of the greatest ever made in any genre. But every time I post it, the responses I always get are like, man, it's a real guilty pleasure of mine. No, it's not. It's a great song. You don't have
to. I can't stand that. I cannot fucking stand that. No, no, no one needs to use guilty pleasure. Do not preface your interests, your likes. I'm done. I'm so glad you said that. I don't want to ever hear anyone say preface my guilty pleasure. No. This is life for you and I. This is life. I just want to use
those
three words.
Sometimes I feel like I'm just trying to like force people to engage with this as art in general, like not as a joke, not as a throwback, as something living and breathing in front of you right now. That's why I love right. Slipknot so much, and why I put their debut album at the top of my greatest nu metal albums list. Why I think that their self-titled debut record is the greatest nu metal album of all time is because it was this. It's so urgent. And alive, it forces you to confront whatever version of yourself you hear in it. And that's uncomfortable. The Strokes don't do that. You know, those bands don't do that. They allow you to inhabit a cooler version of yourself. When you're listening to Hard to Explain or Last Night, you're like, fuck yeah, I'm really cool. This is cool guy music. If you're listening to nu metal, you're who you are, bro. You know?
That's a brilliant philosophy, and I don't want to sound hyperbolic as I attribute that to you. That is brilliant because no one has articulated it in that way, that rawness. There is a level of depth. The superficial, people say, okay, this is music you listened to when you were younger. This is nostalgia. And to that, I vehemently disagree. I push back with maximum force. I'm like you. I think that this is the realest, truest, authentic, most kind of deep down, visceral music that we have. And you even mentioned Bring Me the Horizon has kind of circled back to that part of themselves. And we all grew up in the scene together in terms of being around the same age and being, you know, post-hardcore. I was adjacent, of course. But I think that's so fascinating. I like the way you phrased it philosophically.
The key that unlocks it for me, though, in nu metal that I don't hear in other genres of music is that those nu metal artists were bad. Is that they were not being poetic enough. They were not being musically gifted enough. They were not good singers. You know, they were defying the laws of conventionally good music. And as a result of that, all that music to me sounds kind of like, it's like you have like this wound on your arm and you bandaged it up really well. And it's like, you have a really nice looking bandage there. And then when you listen to nu metal to me, like you're just taking that off. And you're having to put alcohol or rubbing alcohol right on that wound that you've been ignoring for so long. And it hurts. It hurts because you don't have Kurt Cobain or Bob Dylan or Paul McCartney to make it sound beautiful with these melodies and these words and all of this tortured genius and stuff. You literally just have, you know, cut my life into pieces. This is my last resort. Like, I'm going to kill myself tonight, bro. And like you can't run away from that feeling, however that makes you feel. You can try. You can be like, remember this old song, or this is so cringe, or it's a meme or something. But it's like if you sit down and you take that seriously, you might discover something about yourself that you forgot.
That's poignant. And that really does bring us to the final part of this conversation, because I'm so glad I got your philosophical take on nu metal. You were able to break it down in a way that I think it'll resonate and make people think, like, why am I using these terms like guilty pleasure, cringe? Why am I, you know, feeling like I have to preface my whole life? Just be who the fuck you are and enjoy this finite existence you were given.
Because
I'm with you.
There's so many more of us out there that are not gifted or talented in that way. To where it's like you don't have to pile up all this stuff to make you feel like you're someone that you're not. Just be who you are. investigate yourself. You know, that's what nu metal was all about. Was it was all about finding, figuring out what the pain inside really meant.
Well, that is very, very true. And I guess in your opinion then, you know, going forward, you know, what has been the most significant change in nu metal as a genre since its inception? You've really curated the entire landscape recently. So, I mean, what is the most significant change you have seen, if any?
The worst thing that happened to us was post-grunge. Because what happened was around the turn of the century is you had bands like Stained getting really, like turning away from nu metal, making post-grunge and getting really big in the process. And that kind of closed down the scope of things into being smaller and smaller. What I find optimistic, what makes me optimistic, what makes me interested in the newer forms of nu metal coming out is a reappraisal and an embrace of the sincerity of making the music that you feel like you have to make. Not making the music that you feel like you should be making or that the TikTok algorithm wants you to make, but like literally just like fuck, I've just got to make this music. This is the music that I've got to make. And I think a lot of what I hear now is very raw, is very energetic, and is very, in many ways, bad. It is poorly produced. Songwriting's not all there. Structures are a little off. The playing is a little sloppy. But I can hear inside of that music the personal dedication and desire to create something bigger than oneself. And that is all that matters. So, and if anyone listening to this is making their own kind of music and wants to be heard, you got to come to me. I do not ever get a DM and think like, oh fuck, I don't, here comes another submission. Like, you got to send me your music. I'll figure it out. I'll get to it. Just make sure I hear it, whatever it takes.
So everybody do that. Everybody DM your music to Kirk. He's open. Bringing us back to that earlier point, I think this is the perfect way to close out this conversation, Kirk. What do you see as the biggest misconception about nu metal, and how do you address it through your work?
I think what the biggest misconception about nu metal was that it was this reductive, misogynist, sexist genre for angry whites. It was consumed by angry whites quite a bit. Yes, we were definitely the face of that movement. But the misogyny, the sexism, all of this stuff, very overblown. I think in a lot of ways, this music was very honest, very in touch with itself and what those emotions meant. So like the misogyny, for one thing, right? People will talk about like Limp Bizkit and stuff as being like mean towards women. They certainly could do that kind of thing. But what I think you had in a lot of those early songs, like Nookie, like Nobody Loves Me, songs like that, was really just had hurt and confused kids or young adults or adults expressing themselves in a way that was, sure, like problematic, but also honest. When I think of an alternative to that, I would point to bands like Glassjaw or Brand New, who were very like they wielded their anger against women in a way that was very pointed. Whereas with a lot of nu metal bands, it was literally just this naked and ugly and cringy expression of feeling. And I think that it was an much more inclusive genre than people give it credit for. Sure, yes, a lot of high school bullies lived for that shit. But if that is one of the biggest things that I think keeps people away from that music, is that they think of it as such. And I would say, no, explore that a little more, because what I think you'll find is I think you'll find a lot of people with a very honest desire to understand these feelings, but not the capabilities necessarily to express them correctly, however the fuck that might be. You know, there's always going to be a place in art, I think, for people to be problematic. It's easier to like read a book or watch a movie and discuss authoritarian intent than it is to listen to a song that uses the word bitch or the F slur or something and be like, and like suss out where that impulse may have come from. But I think that if you approach it with a more critical, a more open mind, you'll find this music to be very honest. And that is, to me, my favorite thing about nu metal, was that it was just always a very honest genre. It's like what we've been talking about this whole time. You can't half-ass this. You can't put on a front for this. You got to go all in. You got to commit. Be yourself.
Yeah, and we need more honesty.
Don't we?
We do. We need more honesty in our society.
And I need a pair of them jeans, yeah. Akiva. So if you got a sample selection in your closet or something, I'm a 32 waist. So I'm just saying.
I wish, but I'm going to make you something one day. We're going to collaborate.
Yeah.
I think that's what's coming next.
Yeah.
We're going to figure this out together. And speaking of which, what is next for Kirk? That's my final question to you, Kirk. What's next for Kirk and what's next for Crazy Ass Moments in New Metal History, both?
Well, I'm about 2 months away from homelessness, so hopefully I come up with something in between now and then that prevents that from happening. The actual next thing, you're getting an exclusive peek at this one, is with an artist friend of mine, we've designed a tribal Mario Nintendo Switch case. So it's a Nintendo Switch case with Mario on it with like an eyebrow piercing and a tribal tattoo. So we're going to drop that. Hopefully, I think next week I'm going to really put the gears in motion behind that. Something that I really want to get to today that I made is something that I'm calling the New Metal Pledge, right? So it's a filter on Instagram that you can use that'll put up this like very special, very important saying. It's like, if New Metal had 1 million fans, I'm one of them. If it has 5 fans, I'm one of them. If it's 1 fan, that one is me. New Metal has no fans, I'm no longer alive. The world is against New Metal, I'm against the entire world. Till my last breath, I'll support New Metal. This is something that I've always put this on pictures of different influencers and people I sign merch to. You're going to get some shit right after this is over, by the way. So like people, like I'll send them some merch of mine and I'll affix that text to it manually and post it. Now it's like, and then I asked people, I was like, hey, you should do this to your photos and send it to me. And I was like, nobody really, less people than you think know how to like take a picture, put it in Photoshop, open a transparent PNG, affix the PNG, put it back on their phone, right? Send it to you.
Too much work.
So I was like, I'll just program a filter and people can do it that way. So I'll publicize that, I think, today if I have the energy to do it. But, you know, we have the website going. That's cranking. We've got our 100 albums list on there. If you haven't read that, absolutely read it. We worked so hard on it. It's 38,000 words. So we have our 100 greatest new metal albums list out. Oh, and are you in LA?
I'm not currently, but I live in LA. But I live in LA. So
oh, my God.
Currently I'm in.
And we're throwing another Deftones party on the 24th of February. And the last one we did of those, which is on the 13th of this month, was fucking amazing. Like, it went off huge. And I'm really optimistic that we're getting into an audience there that are like, of like Angelinos that enjoy like going to goth alt nights, but maybe want something that also kind of like rocks. So you go to enough of those goth alt nights and you're like, ah, here's Typo Negative again, or a band that sounds exactly like Typo Negative. And I think that it's cool to like play songs by The Cure in Depeche Mode and then like Linkin Park. And then, you know, you do The Smiths and you do The Cure and then you do Deftones. And like that, I think, makes the night so much more fun. We did an At the Drive-In song at the last one and the place fucking exploded. It was like,
oh, wow.
It was so dope. So I'm going to get on my shit. I'm going to do a big flyering campaign and stuff and make this one that's happening on the 24th. I'm going to really try to sell it out. I'm going to really try to sell it out.
Yeah. And just two things real quick. Shout out to Jim Ward, who was on the podcast previously from At the Drive-In. So go back and check that episode out. I think that'll be super insightful. And number two, all of the listeners have got to go to these parties who are in LA. I know Kirk's been doing these parties. I got to go there. That's going to be my next thing. So I'm excited for the next one. Hopefully, if I'm in town, I'm there. Let me just tell you that right now.
That to me is like the apex of the new metal agenda, is like, we're not on our phones at all. There is no social media to interface with here. We're in the same room and I'm playing these songs and we're all loving it. Like that to me is like, that's as good as it gets. Is when the social media platforms got nothing to do with what's going on here. I'm not tapping like or retweet or DMs or anything. We're just in this room having a great time.
Well, I'm super excited for everything that you're doing. And that Switch case, I really need to see more of that in the future too. So make sure you send me, you know, that so I can promote it. But yo, in the interim, Kirk, I appreciate you so much for doing the podcast today. You know, thank you for being here. And it was super insightful to talk to you, man.
Yeah, as you can tell, I can just keep going. We don't have to be done at all. We could do 18 more hours. But it honestly, it was such a pleasure.
We're going to.
It was such a pleasure. It's always an absolute blast to connect with people that have been like waiting for someone to just unlock that door and just throw up their arms and be like, fuck it, I fucking love all this terrible music and you can't tell me what to do anymore.
No, it's absolutely perfect. We're going to do a follow-up episode in the future because this has been insightful and we have so much ground we need to cover still. So I'll be looking out for that.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, brother. Thank you so much.